Right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week, we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool? Is it shit? Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit? Welcome to the editor's meeting.
We're recording, by the way.
So, the Cool Shit Podcast, episode 13. My name, still the same name as last week, is Gareth Carter. And quite excited because we have a couple of new guests this week. We've been trying to get Ben Wrigglesworth on for a long time, but every time it's like, no. And this week we went, yeah, but we're getting Will Douglas on. He went, sick. So, sick. Ben, how you going?
Very good, thank you. And how are you?
I'm all right, but you need to speak into the mic.
Right, I'm pretty amateur at this, obviously.
Are you happy to be here?
I am ecstatic.
Even more excited to have Will Douglas on here, because Will is part of the extended family. He is a photographer that we've worked with for a long time and does a lot of work with us on high stakes films. So, Will, thank you very much for being our first sort of like extended guest that we've had.
I feel like we need a bit of a round of applause. But you can't hear it.
So, as usual, James, you're here. So James is the chief editor, aka the little chef, of the Cool Shit Experience / newsletter. How are you doing?
Yeah, we're changing it to Cool Shit Extravaganza, actually. But yeah, I'm doing all right.
James, did you have a good week?
Yeah, I had a lovely week. I went on holiday.
Oh, that's interesting. Where did you go?
I went to Valencia for a day.
For a day? Now, I felt like before you went away, you were going away for 3 days.
I was.
What happened?
Changed my mind because I lost my passport on the way to the airport, and airlines take a fairly dim view of that when you want to travel to another country.
Where was your passport in the end?
It was in an Uber in Leighton.
And did you have to go to Leighton to get your passport?
I did. So I tried to go to Valencia and I went to Leighton.
All right, well, happy endings. How has the world of cool shit been this week? I know you've been distracted. I hope you've kept your eye on it.
Oh, yeah, I keep my ears to the ground. Yeah, it's been decent. Well, as you know, Gareth, you gave me a bit of a brief this week in order to make the most of our esteemed guest. So both of the stories that we're going to talk about have a bit of a production-y photography, perhaps, spin.
Okay,
I cool. love it when it's called that, production-y photography. That's on Will's website, that is.
Well, Mr. Production-y Photography, yeah.
So go on then, what's the first story that you're bringing to the table this week?
So the first one, and admittedly, I'm being slightly biased by including this, but Everton released a behind-the-scenes video from the day that they ensured Premier League survival, and it's just pretty glorious from start to finish.
Is it glorious because it's Everton, or is it glorious because it's...
I'd say both, because if you look at the comments, I had a quick look, and it's all like, as a Liverpool fan, as a Leeds fan, as a Burnley fan, like, there was kind of unanimity in the football community that it was a pretty sick video. And you can't get football fans to agree on anything.
Can we explain the video for the listeners? Because it's about 20 minutes long, right?
It's 20 minutes, and it starts from the last month or so. Everton fans have been going absolutely sort of bonkers from the start, from before the game, when the bus is arriving, letting off flares, passing dogs around and stuff, which is a weird tradition that we're carrying on with now. And it goes from that to then having the kind of highlights from a pitch side view, to then in the changing room, to then the kind of aftermath.
And there was the pitch invasion.
And the pitch invasion.
I mean, I don't want to condone, you know, pitch invasions, but I'm saying that I want to go to one.
Yeah, they did.
It did look like a lot of fun, didn't it?
Isn't that the game where Vieira got...
They edited that part out where he booted a bloke who deserved a good kick in, to be fair.
So it wasn't true behind the scenes.
Who's actually made it? I know that the club...
The club made it. I don't... The sort of internal creative team.
Because we've worked with Liverpool. And...
Yeah, so Liverpool did a series called Inside Anfield. This one's called Tunnel Access. But more and more clubs are doing it, where you go behind the scenes on game day. This was just a particularly massive game and a big result, so it's got a lot of emotion.
Yeah, it's very raw. It feels like it's scripted in a way, just because the game was so mental. It's kind of the best version of one of these that I've ever seen. I genuinely cried.
I feel like you're about to cry now.
I genuinely
hear it.
And that's what I thought, should I bring this or should I not? But any video that reduces me to tears, I think, deserves a mention.
I think so. Okay, like, some interesting things here. So, talking about it from a sort of production aspect, because all of us in the room have worked in football, still do. And if you've worked in football, you'll know, as a creative, as a photographer, as a filmmaker, the big things that you're looking for are really access. Authenticity is sort of key. And then sort of the connection to the fans, I guess. But that's what this film did really well. That, like, I felt like the access was brilliant. And some of the shots in it are, like, I thought were phenomenal. For me, what a lot of brands are trying to do, but they can't quite get the access to do.
Yeah, I think it gives you a totally different perspective on a game day. You get access, like you say, to players that you never really get during a game or from a brand perspective. Even when it comes down to the shots, that they the way they shoot the game,
which, like, are kind of part of the crowd as well, particularly where they're filming from, because it's just in front of them, so you're getting all the kind of raw, and you can see, like, the pyro and stuff.
Yeah, you feel like a fan when you're watching it, right? You feel like you're in the stadium. Yeah.
But I sort of also thought that it kind of almost looked like a fan was shooting it. It kind of looked like someone really loved the club.
It probably was,
and they were seeing it through a really, you know, someone maybe who hasn't worked in the industry that much or something, because it felt sort of so visceral and so raw to the point that they just shot naturally what was in front of them. And if you get that access to see all these amazing things going on, all the players, like, no one really reacted to the camera apart from a few of the crowd that were sort of shouting at it. Like, none of the players interacted with anything like that. It was all so as if a fan was just doing it on the side, like a fly on the wall.
Although
sort of.
Part of me really hopes that it was actually a Liverpool fan that made it.
So we've been working with Mitre for a bit, and we had that film, the Buxton film, which it kind of, there was a similarity in that of, you know, and I'll go back to the point I was trying to make, it's sort of like authenticity, fans and access. And you worked on that shoot, right? Were you on that shoot, Will?
Yes, we were, over a course of like a week.
Yeah, so we spent 3 days working with Buxton FC. They were the lowest ranked team left in the FA Cup at the second round, and they were playing Morecambe. So we went up and spent 3 days, was it?
I felt like it was longer. We really sort of integrated into their way of life, didn't we?
Yeah, so we got to know everyone at the club in a really short space of time, and it was such an amazing experience to go behind the scenes at a small club like that and see what it means to that club to play at that level in front of those cameras.
That's what's amazing. When you have that access, because you captured the team talk, the talk before the game happened and the talk at halftime. Now, we've come a little bit more used to seeing that with programs like All or Nothing? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Within advertising, that's a really hard thing to do. So we achieved that on Mitre, which I thought was great, which is just why I thought this film was, like, fantastic. Do you think that piece of content transcends being an Everton fan?
I did, because I think it was really emotive, and it was because it was so raw. And the, you know, when they went 2-0 behind and all the documentary was sort of showing this, you felt kind of sad because you've only watched it for 10 minutes, but you feel like, because you've seen the progress of a whole day plan out, you're kind of rooting for the team. And obviously when they come back, it's almost like a real joyous moment that does turn into that kind of festival vibe. But the festival's like that because everyone is on the best form of their life because the club's won. And if football can make someone feel like that, then you almost feel, oh, maybe... Yeah, everyone can feel like that from football.
It was a different kind of celebration as well, because normally with, like, pitch invasions, often it's a celebration of complete joy, whereas this was relief after, like, a season of torture facing potential certain death if Everton get relegated and then could be sort of liquidated as a club because our finances would be screwed. So this was really all or nothing.
James, I can tell you're an Everton fan by your really sharp Liverpudlian accent.
I've definitely got a Scouser's aggression, so watch what you say.
James, what other stories have you highlighted this week?
Moving swiftly on. So we spoke about the Kendrick Lamar video, which I don't know if you two have seen, for The Heart Part 5, in which he used deepfakes to adopt the faces of an interesting bunch of blokes. And one of the things that we spoke about was whether, like, this type of technology could be used in, like, cinema, for example, so that actors wouldn't actually have to turn up for work. And in a slightly more morbid version of that, Stan Lee, as in Marvel Stan Lee, his cameos in the Marvel Universe could be making a comeback due to some new CGI technology.
So Stan Lee, sort of like famously for Marvel fans, every film that up until a point, I don't know if he's they haven't CGI'd him, him in yet, but every film from, I think, Spider-Man in sort of like 2002 onwards, he's had a little cameo appearance.
Yeah, when you say up to a point, do you mean his death is that point?
That his death is that point, right? So he hasn't been in the most recent ones, but he's always had a cameo. It's like he's a delivery guy or he's a guy in a coffee shop. And it's always a little light touch. But now, I guess he was quite aware that he did a deal with Disney, right, before he died. So he knew the pack that he was signing. For me, I've got questions straight away. Like,
unfortunately, from what I've read, he wasn't that well before he died when he signed this. When he signed this deal,
it stands to reason. Yeah,
this is a bit. Yeah, this is a bit depressing. But there's a lot of stories around the fact that was he well when he signed this agreement? Was he mentally in the right place? Would he have agreed to it if he wasn't?
Right, exactly. Because
surely he's got a team and stuff, though.
Yeah, but.
Although I'm more Canadian,
Marvel, if you dig into sort of like the Marvel sort of mythology and then further into like the way that they were working, Marvel like has had moments where it was on its arse, like the comics, and it's always been a sort of a roller coaster journey for him. So I can imagine as he got older, suddenly, I mean, he'd hit gold. They are the biggest films on Earth.
They're the only films.
Yeah, his creations are the stars of the biggest movies.
So
now,
do they kind of own his image now?
Well, this is the question. We don't understand this. Like, I'm quite honest about this. I'm not quite a fay with like likeness and who owns your likeness, because with deep fakes now, yeah, you have like videos with deep fakes and like even on like apps you go through and like, oh, look like Johnny Depp, look like Leonardo DiCaprio, and you're like, what, did they say that was okay? Who's in charge of like digital likeness
now? So who decides what he does, what he says, what his image is, what his role is?
I mean, like Stan Lee, like, I'm a bit of a Marvel fan, bit of a Spider-Man fan. Shout out Spidey, shout out Peter Parker,
shout out Gareth Carter,
big fan.
But you know, the guy has basically created a modern mythology, so he probably will go down as, you know, someone of note. Right now someone else is in charge of what you say, how you act, how you turn up, and your image now becomes part of the ether. It comes part of what Disney want it to be.
Well, we had something as well a few weeks ago where it was something like you can upload your voice and a load of stuff to like a computer program, and then basically there'll be an immortal version of you in the metaverse. It seems like this is kind of another version of people dying but not completely kind of ceasing to exist, which is pretty dystopian and scary, that kind of death could become a dying concept.
I saw the Star Wars film where they recreated Princess Leia after Carrie Fisher had passed away, and it was all right, but it's a bit ropey. Did you see that?
Yeah, didn't they just have a wave or something?
I don't know, but it still looked a little bit creepy, not real, dead behind the eyes sort of style.
Gimmicky? Does it feel gimmicky?
Yeah, it just doesn't feel right. You just kind of know, like you know.
Is that because you know?
Maybe that is, and maybe.
But then how do you get away from that?
Yeah,
can you?
Yeah.
Well, what I was thinking about when I read this story is like things like The Simpsons. They will happily drag up a character from the past and just have a little cameo with, I don't know, Franklin Roosevelt or someone like that from the past. Is this not just a more modern version of that? Is it?
Well, this is kind of the thing, because you know you said with like those filters. I think you can get away with those because they're so shit and unrealistic. But as it gets more and more closer to reality, that's when it becomes slightly more questionable. So I think you're probably kind of right in a way, but a yellow version of FDR is so obviously fictionalized. Mm. Whereas like if you didn't know Stan Lee was dead and then you see him saying something in a deep fake version, then you might actually think that's the real guy.
Yeah, right. And that's what kids that are fans of the Marvel Universe, like kids that aren't even born yet, because I imagine that the Marvel films will still be going in 20 years time, they'll still have fans and they'll just assume, hey, that's the guy, that's Stan Lee, and they probably won't even think whether he's alive or not. No.
Yeah,
I mean, if you were an actor and you'd passed away, but before you passed away, you know, this conversation happened, would you sort of say, actually, you know what, for that amount of money or whatever the contract is, you can do it?
I think there is that. These are the questions that are going to start to be asked.
If that hadn't happened before, then is it down to the family to make? But then it really should be that person, but they can't.
Plus, also, it's not just your legacy. Then it could be your, it could be income for your family forever if you still get paid for appearances.
Yeah, it's an interesting one.
I don't know, it does feel. There was a photographer called Vivian Mayer who, she was like a nanny through the 60s, and so anyway, you know, when she died, they found these boxes of amazing photographs. Do you remember this doco? And then, so they did loads of exhibitions. And now she's quite a famous, like, documentary photographer. But after she died, and the question is, you know, why did she never show anyone the pictures? Did she just not want to?
So have you seen this, Ben, as a fellow street photographer? Like, this lady was, I think it's like 50s, 60s, isn't it?
Yeah, around
she
there,
was
yeah.
going out, just taking the most amazing street photography, and never showed it to anyone.
So it was all just boxed up for years in someone's garage. Boxed up, yeah.
And then, you know, someone found it, made a book, made a documentary of it, which is an amazing documentary. Did lots of exhibitions. And obviously her family,
that is weird,
financially rewarding from it.
Just because something's good.
But did she, you know, the main question is, did she want someone to look at her photographs? And if they, you know, that question can never truly be answered. And now someone else has taken that decision to do that.
Yeah, because just because something is good, that doesn't necessarily mean the world has a right to see it.
Yeah.
Like, and so we brought this up a couple weeks ago. Like, if you go to like a museum of some author, for example, like, there'll be a load of stuff with like unpublished diaries, and you think there's a diary and it's unpublished, and that's probably for good reason. This wasn't meant to be for kind of public consumption, and is the modern version of that going to be, here's a text
though
that Kanye West sent?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd read some of Kanye West's texts.
Does he text you a lot?
He does text me quite a bit. I'm always like, listen, mate, I'm busy.
How is he dealing with the breakup?
Oh, it's been hard on Ye, but, you know, every time we go for a drink in the Dog and Duck, you know, he perks up a little bit.
Is that his favourite pub?
The name Ye doesn't really suit him anymore. He's so sad, does it?
No.
Should be Nay.
Ben, have you brought something to the editors' meeting for this week?
Wait a minute. Let me just fire up my laptop.
Let me just quickly Google something.
So apparently Burger King have launched a limited edition burger series for bizarre pregnancy cravings. Okay, so Burger King Germany launched a new limited burger edition to celebrate Mother's Day on the 8th of May. Now, the concoctions are mad. So what have we got? We've got sausage and fried herring. Sounds delicious.
And is there, just for the people listening, there are pictures of these that
Just close your eyes and imagine that you're at a restaurant and the waiter's reading out today's specials.
Salivating.
They're kind of Heston Blumenthal almost.
They're quite bizarre, aren't they? Yeah. From a photography perspective, they're quite cool.
Yeah.
Combinations that you wouldn't expect to see. No. We've got strawberry ice cream and fries.
That's all right.
I mean, that's not too bad.
That's fine. Yeah.
And what about vanilla ice cream and olives?
That's,
is that
not
a combo
so
you go for?
Well, as long as there's a patty in there,
yeah,
it's a
exactly,
burger,
yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, if they hadn't included a patty, I'd be angry. But there's a patty in all of them.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realise that. Yeah. Oh, none of these are that bad then.
So all you've got there is, you know, when you get a chip and you dip it in.
Yeah, in a milkshake.
You know, milkshake.
Yeah.
It's basically that, just put in a bun.
So what I'm yet to determine from my research is whether this is just a little PR stunt or whether they're actually selling them. Oh no, the meals were available for just one day only at Burger King, a Burger King store in Berlin.
Amazing, so you could actually get them.
You could try them. So
oh,
I think,
Mum, I've got a treat for you, a herring burger.
I bet they were selling like hotcakes.
I think for me the story gets cooler, to be honest.
So Burger King have made it onto the podcast discussions quite a few times,
yeah.
Because Burger King's like MO is to be a challenger brand and to think different and to grab your attention and sort of like create disruption within, you know, a very competitive marketplace. So it doesn't surprise me that they've done something like this. James, you're usually a fan of Burger King. What did you think?
I like it because it's obviously kind of, it's capturing the absurd by looking at it, and it's kind of utterly repulsive if you're not pregnant. I'm not sure exactly what it's doing other than just kind of backing up the idea that Burger King do things a little different to the McDonald's and KFC of the world. Although I did have my first Burger King in years the other day, coming back from Valencia, and it was bang average. So that's kind of turned me against
it. You had a really weird week,
didn't you? I did. I was crying into a hamburger at like But early Monday morning, yeah.
Was it a strawberry ice cream and fries?
It wasn't. I wish it was, but I probably would have gone for that if so.
Did you get a milkshake and dip on?
I didn't. I just got the burger.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Not a meal. Said you want a meal,
and this is weird.
I looked at her and I said no.
Are there any combinations that you crave that you put in a burger?
In a burger, I'm pretty traditionalist when it comes to burgers. Like even the egg in a burger, I can't resist that.
Australian thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Gherkin, just.
A gherkin.
I'm going to ask the room, like, Gareth, are you a gherkin kind of?
I wasn't when I was a kid, but then I grew up and then I was like, yes to gherkins.
I'm just coming onto my gherkin phase.
You're finally grown up.
Yeah.
I've just reached them. Always loved them.
Yeah, so just.
Yeah, but you're always old before your time, you know?
Yeah, I eat them on their own.
Right, so just one follow up question then. If someone, you're with someone and they take the gherkin out,
pathetic.
Would you put it in yours?
Yeah, no.
Probably.
No.
No, not yes.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I would as well. Yeah, I would. It's just good for everyone to know.
They look vile.
You can't even handle a gherkin, and you've brought a herring burger to the table.
I'm not saying I'd eat it. I'm just saying it exists. It's a campaign. What do we think?
James, the point that you're making, I think, it's a strong point. Like, what is it actually connected to? What's it actually saying? So, yeah, it's Mother's Day. So, because it's Mother's Day, we're celebrating what your mother might have craved.
Yeah, it makes me. I feel insulted for my mother.
Do you?
Yeah. Nice woman.
Your mother listens to the podcast, doesn't she?
Yeah.
What's her name?
Vanessa. Hi, Mum.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hey, Vanessa. I just wonder if they've only bought those burgers out so we talk about them today.
Pretty much, yeah. It's gimmicky, and the gimmick's kind of worked. And we've kind of fallen for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun, but is it a bit try hard, maybe? Trying to be a bit too crazy?
A bit kooky. Yeah. They're like, oh, I'm not like other girls.
I'm not like other burgers.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's what Burger King are always trying to do. Sometimes it hits, sometimes it doesn't. So we'll discuss this at the
that's
end.
That slogan never really caught on, did it? Sometimes it hits, sometimes it doesn't.
Will, have you got something that you'd like to bring to the table this week?
Yeah.
Go on.
I do. And it revolves around Ricky Gervais.
You remind me of him a bit.
Yeah, well, don't know how to take that. In what sense?
Just height, really.
Right. So, obviously, he's got a new stand-up show on Netflix.
Which I went, a bit of a stir.
Which I went to watch.
Oh, did he?
Live. Oh, you went to watch it live?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which was...
sick.
One of the funniest nights of my life. So I've learned a lot from that.
I think we talked about this as well. That was a while back, wasn't it?
A while ago, yeah. You know, seeing something live is very different to watching it on TV. Because I think in those shows, there's a lot of jokes he sort of does, and sometimes they don't fall very well, so he just never actually obviously released them on the Netflix thing. But obviously it's caused a bit of a stir this week because, and I quote, "Supernature contains dangerous anti-trans rants masquerading as jokes." But you know, I think, you know, my point to sort of bringing this up is, you know, how much free will can... you know, comedians and essentially people have to have fun and make jokes about things in that kind of environment.
Dave Chappelle
photography
picked up some heat from his Netflix special, and now Ricky Gervais is, and I think directly it's for being sort of like anti-trans or transphobic. It's been pulled up about,
and also the point of Ricky Gervais is everybody can get it. Like, if anything, it would be anti-trans not to make anti-trans jokes because it kind of puts them in a protected class.
Yeah,
it's kind of patronising. People can't take a joke.
You know, you could argue that no jokes would ever exist.
I'm glad you brought this because I feel very strongly that there is absolutely nothing that is completely outside the bounds of comedy and things that you can joke about. That doesn't mean that every joke about certain things will be funny, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be able to joke about it.
So you think everything's up for grabs?
So there's no
absolutely.
So there's no line.
There can be a line. The line is it funny or not?
With comedy, have you ever been in a situation where a joke has almost felt like it's directly targeted at you? Because I think it's very easy to give an opinion, but you've never had that targeted at you and your own struggles.
People don't have to be the butt of people's jokes. That's what I'm
saying.
Oh,
yeah, they do.
They don't have to be. We can be the butt of people's jokes. That is a more...
Who's we then? Who's not included in we?
That's what I mean. The audience need to feel like if they're taking on a journey where it's like everyone feels that they can go along with the joke. That's, for me, that's the line.
There's an enormous difference between targeting a joke at an individual and telling a joke about like a group of people. Like, that's a massive difference for me.
So if a comedian made a joke about an individual person, for example.
Yeah, because that's not really a thing. That's just abuse. If you're just abusing one person to their face, that's not what the art form is. The art form for a comedian is observing societal weirdness and making it funny.
So what's your opinion on what happened with Will Smith then, for example?
Oh yeah, I was going to sort of bring that up.
It was insane in terms of Will Smith is utterly indefensible. Like,
his reaction, yeah, but... The joke was
pretty harmless. She, as Ricky Gervais pointed out, he could have talked about her boyfriend rather than a haircut. So
yeah, no, of course, yeah, yeah. Maybe the joke wasn't necessarily as harsh as it could have been, right? But that's still directed at someone personally.
But okay, but then we're talking about different levels, because that's not kind of talking about somebody's whole identity. It was talking about her hair, and it wasn't even particularly mean. And just because I don't think the joke was that funny, but I don't think there is ever a legitimate excuse to go and hit a comedian.
Well, I think that's to Gareth's point, isn't it? It wasn't her necessarily that got offended, but it was the person she was with.
She kind of gave him the eye that said, go and whack that fella for me, will you?
Oh, I think you read into that. She felt, you could see that she felt uncomfortable with it, but no one told Will Smith to go up and punch someone in the face. That was his own bravado ego that made him do that. He felt that, you know, that's what was required of him at the time. Well, that's a mistake on his part, right? Because I'm sure she did not say to him, go and hit him now.
Yeah, and to be fair, you're right to call me out on that, because you're right, because that is a joke. So I'm actually going to change my position slightly, because that was a joke at one person, and that's also completely fine. Right? If you can't... No, it is. It is. It depends, but it comes back to the original point, that it depends entirely on the joke. It's impossible to have a kind of overall absolute rule on what you can and can't joke about to who you can and can't joke about.
Do you think that comedians, like, just have no... care about, not all comedians, but some comedians, like, deep down, do they really care about offending people?
Should
or
they?
Not?
No, because
should
I think they want, in a way, they want people to talk about them, and it gets conversations like this happening, so it probably makes it, you know, them more of a figure.
I think it's an art form, comedy, right? And I don't agree with James's point that, like, if it's funny, that, like, if it's making someone laugh, it's okay, because you can look at lots of comedy in the past where you're like, I don't think this is helpful for society, right? I don't think this is a helpful place. You could probably go back as far as Nazi Germany and see the propaganda and the comedic ways that they were pushing out and go, like, okay, I don't think that's helpful. But what I do think comedians are doing, and they do, when you see it done, it's like, it's such an art form, is that they err on that side where we feel uncomfortable as a society. So to your point and your point, it's not about an individual, and that's when comedy is really good, when it's questioning what we're all thinking in society, whichever way we think about it, and we can both snigger and laugh at that joke. Then I think it's doing, like, something that's, it's very deep, it's serving a purpose there, because it's throwing that mirror back to society, and that's an art. James, what are we thinking, and this is where you can challenge him, about what makes it into the Cool Shit extravaganza?
Yeah.
AKA newsletter, this week, from what's been talked about on the podcast today.
I like both my two. The Stan Lee one, I feel less strongly about, because I do think it's a bit kind of dystopian and weird. The Burger King one, we've said this before, Burger King are kind of slightly victims of their own success, where they've done quite a lot of shit in the past that really does impress me. So even though I quite like this and I like the novelty factor, I don't know if it's worth going in necessarily. The Ricky Gervais one is interesting, because I think it's an interesting talking point, but even the fact that it's so debatable clearly shows that it isn't absolutely, definitely, certainly cool shit, which kind of makes me, I think it's a point of debate rather than a certainty to go into the newsletter. So basically what I'm saying, Gareth, is my head's a mess. I don't know what's going on.
I'm not sure where we've concluded from that, really.
Yeah, no.
Do you want to conclude it, Gareth, instead?
I think For me, the Everton film is a good film, and I think it does that thing of transcending whether you're an Everton fan or not. Stan Lee's creepy shit, not cool shit. It's for me that's sort of like creepy.
I agree. I think the tech, the capability is kind of cool shit.
Yeah.
But the situation is kind of uncomfortable shit.
Yeah.
if you have those.
We kind of do though. We do go down the slightly creepy route, because often we'll kind of give it to the readers and say, here's some cool technology, we're not so sure about the implications of it. Yeah. Kind of, what do you leave it a little bit open ended? So I'm not completely ruling that one out.
And then sort of Ricky Gervais, do I think it's cool? I don't know, I'm not sure. I think Ricky Gervais might have crossed that threshold into not being cool now, but still representative of certain views that people want to hear. But do I think it's cutting edge anymore? I don't know if it is. James, if everyone wants to go and find out more about the cool shit extravaganza, where do they go?
Well, you've reminded me that I haven't changed the URL yet. So at the moment, it's still zachagency.com/cool-sht. Catchy.
Okay, it's looking quite summery out there. Does anyone fancy...
Margarita?
Yeah. thanks very much, guys.
Thank you for having us. I've got a few adjustments I'd like to make to the podcast in general. So.
Oh, listen, okay. He doesn't come on it for weeks. We have to beg him, and then he comes on and he's got adjustments that he wants to make. Jesus Christ.
Just from a production point of view, you know? This was the topic.